All right. Well, thanks for coming after lunch. I actually will likely, I mean, assuming that that everything goes as planned, I will actually present a demonstration of latte here. Assuming that everything goes as planned, let's see whether. So every one of the theorems that I'm going to present today is joined work with the following beautiful people, not the Tower of Pisa, Michel Barnier, Nicole Berlin, Veleda Valdoni, and Matthias Koppe. So I will start, so my talk will have essentially three parts. So I will talk about what's the mathematical question, which is almost undergraduate level question, if you want. Then I will try to argue why this is very interesting, talk about what our theorems are and what our methods are, and then present the software at the end. Okay? So let's get started. So my problem is the following. You're given a convex d-dimensional rational polytope inside Rn. So I think it's important to notice that I don't make the assumption that my polytope is full dimensional. And somebody gave me a polynomial with rational coefficients, and I would like to compute the exact value of the integral of this polynomial in with respect to the the integral of this polynomial over the polytope with respect to the right measure. And I will tell you a little bit of what I mean by that. But in the meantime, you should think calculus. So I'm sure many of you raise your hand if you have taught calculus before. I'm sure many more. Don't be ashamed. Yes, I know many of you have taught calculus. And so this is something that I would like to convey to people that teach calculus. What we teach is, from the point of view of computation, really useless. I will argue that. And that's something I would like. That would be actually an interesting point of my talk, from the point of view of educational applications. So I want to do this computation. Of course, as I said, the polytope is d-dimensional inside Rn. So that means that I have to be careful with what I mean by the integration. But in general, I mean, I don't want to dwell too much into technicalities of measures, but the important thing to remember maybe is that if it is full dimensional, I'm back into the standard, Riemann integral that we teach to undergraduates, young people. So, and what I mean by exactly is if you have a monomial, for example, like x to the 17, y to the 111, z to the 13, and you want to integrate this monomial over the standard three-dimensional simplex, well, the answer that I expect is not 0 point blah, 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 blah. I expect 1 divided by this beautiful integer. That's the exact answer of this problem in this case. Now, these integrals appear in many areas of mathematics. So if you believe that teaching calculus is important, then you already know my talk is important. But let me tell you a few things. I mean, I actually believe integration is important now. In some sense, this project convinced me that it's useful for some things. So, I mean, in calculus already, we teach undergraduates that you use them to compute volumes, is when the monomial that you're integrating, the polynomial that you're integrating is the polynomial constant 1. And in fact, we talk about moments, we talk about center of mass, all these beautiful basic mechanical notions, basic mechanics. And in reality, this has actually, you will be surprised by how much literature there is on video game, design to make real. So, who's paying more for real simulations? It's not anymore engineers from Boeing. It's actually video game designers. It's very interesting that to see how many people that do video games are interested that, when the soldier gets a shot, the center of gravity is where it's supposed to be and it falls in the right way versus, it looks artificial or in a Toy Story movie, I guess. So there's recent work, quite active work on trying to do fast computation of inverse problems on polyhedral regions. So imagine you're taking X-rays, so the typical tomography problems, You're taking X-rays of an object that is polyhedral. So in particular, recent work by Jean-Bernard Lasserre, Sinai Robbins, Dima Pasechnik, people that in the audience know these guys. So we can reconstruct the vertices of the polytope very fast with respect to very, very few of the moments. I mean, it's a very interesting piece of work where, you know, of course, knowing the moments, the integrations of monomials is very important. In probability and statistics, you know, I was talking to a statistician about, you know, there's two models that try to you have a, somebody's flipping a coin, and, you know, if it gets hit twice, they pay you $2. Otherwise, out of four, if you get two heads out of four, it pays you $2. Otherwise, you know, you have to pay them. And you start figuring out, well, you know, this is not kind of, it doesn't look like this coin is fair. So how can you make guesses about whether this is really a true fair coin or not? And it turns out there is something called, there are polynomial integrals called the marginal likelihood integrals that allow you to decide, you know, essentially whether, which one of the two statistical models is correct. And it turns out that some guys doing computation of these polynomials decided that you know, this is the real model. But when we did the computations exactly, when we actually computed, they had actually chosen the wrong model. And, you know, this is maybe not so relevant for a gambling problem, but if you are trying to decide the right model for influence between drinking beer and cancer, that might be more relevant. So exact computation, I want to argue, is necessary for the simple reason to calibrate. And of course, as we have seen in the wonderful talks of Tom Hales, I mean, the place for exact calculations are also very relevant for pure mathematics. I would like to talk a little bit about the special case of the volume, because I think the volume is fantastic. So volumes, especially volumes of polytopes with integer vertices, appear in algebraic geometry in a natural way. For example, when you look at an integral polytope in three dimensions, and you compute the volume, and you multiply it by d factorial, then you're going to get what algebraic geometers call the degree of the toric variety associated. So this is an interesting algebraic geometric invariant. By the way, you may be saying, well, how do I know that I get an integer? Well, by the measures that I'm using in this talk, all the answers you're going to get are rational numbers. So in particular, when you integrate a full-dimensional polytope, a rational polynomial over a full-dimensional polytope that is rational, you should get a rational number. I mean, so that's why, you know, this makes sense. In algebraic geometry as well, there's the notion of the Newton polytope of a polynomial, and there are some famous bounds for the number of solutions. If you have a system of equations, F1, Fn, so generic system of n equations in n variables. So there's, you know, if it's generic, you expect there's finitely many solutions. But how many are there? And it turns out that the volume computation, well, a mixed volume computation, is relevant to tell you how many solutions are there. And finally, close to my heart, if you compute volumes of very interesting combinatorial polytopes, you can actually get interesting combinatorial counts. For example, there's a very famous polytope, this is called the Catalan polytope by some people, or the Robin Chan polytope, whose volume is exactly equal to the product of the first Catalan numbers. And this was proved by Zeilberger using computers. And so you can actually try to, you know, do a geometric version of the same kind of thing. There are many applications. So I hope this is just to convince you that this problem is maybe not just interesting for teaching undergraduates, but there's certain fundamentality on geometric questions in applied mathematics. Okay, so here comes the point where I try to tell you, sorry, everything you teach undergraduates right now is not the way. So suppose an undergraduate is going to die, or, well, okay, no, let's not be so drastic. So you're not going to get dinner. You're not going to get dinner if you don't compute an integer. You give a reasonable polytope, you know, a three-dimensional, let's say three dimensions, and you want to integrate a monomial, say, you know, a small degree. So what's the wisdom we teach undergraduates? Well, we actually teach them the wisdom of boxes, right? So we teach them about, essentially, Fubini's theorem tells you that if you have a polynomial function f, you have to decompose the region in box-like regions that you can define the upper and the lower and upper limits of integration. So this decomposition into boxes is, you know, once you have the decomposition, it's almost automatic. And of course, you know, undergraduates spend one semester learning how to do this, and it's hard for them because they have to visualize, right? One of the things is, how do you visualize this thing? Well, it turns out there's a paper from 1998 who they prove that this, I mean, they give examples where this procedure is exponential. And the polytopes they give in this paper is not very, very drastic. They're just actually simplices where you can see that the exponential on the number of, on the dimension and the number of vertices. So this is a very bad procedure because you can actually, essentially what you're doing to get the boxes is the so-called Fourier-Moskin elimination procedure, which we know, you know, David Brebner mentioned this in his talk. This is a bad algorithm for doing these things. I mean, it's a very inefficient algorithm. Okay? So it's bad. But it's very maybe good for teaching them what integration is about, but if they really want to integrate in real life, this is not the way you should do it. Any questions so far? So I think some people are actually surprised to know this, you know. I will take 1 second more to say something about education. I mean, I think we should revise our curriculum as time passes, because what was relevant in 1950 may not be relevant in 2011. End of story. Okay, no more punching the dead horse. Okay. Exactly. I'm going to beat it to bed again. Okay. So nevertheless, I mean, to demonstrate that this problem requires some thinking, I mean, it's well known that already for the case of volume computation, if you want to compute the volume of a polytope, there's hardness results, I mean, theoretical hardness results you can prove. So Sharpie Hart in the 80s, there's two very nice papers that are actually independent different proofs, Dyer and Fries and then Cassian. They present a proof that it's Sharpie Hart to compute the volume of a polytope presented by the vertices. So as David did very clearly in his talk, polytopes are schizophrenic. They come with two personalities. So one is vertex personality, the other one is facet personality. And you would like to, you know, maybe go, you know, one thing that is easy in one presentation may not be easy in another one. So it's important to know. Then later, it took a while, 1992, Brightwell and Peter Winkler proved that it's Sharpie Hart to compute the volume of a polytope also presented by the facets. And in fact, later, Dyer and Gritzman proved that computing the volume of sonotopes is already hard. And sonotopes are, you know, one can argue, you know, very nice polytopes, just Minkowski sums of segments. So Jim Lawrence in 1991 proved that there are these very simple examples he can show that to write the volume of a rational polytope, you cannot bound it by a polynomial in the input size. So there are these examples that grow and grow and grow and grow. Of course, this is not in fixed dimension, but you know, you can see. Deterministic approximation algorithms. You don't want to compute exactly for a moment. You say, well, how about approximation? Well, deterministic approximation is hard. But there's all this discussion about randomized approximation. No? I mean, there's beautiful theory and algorithms about this. All I want to say is that, as far as I know, nobody has implemented them. Okay? So what are we going to do? Let's go cry, have a beer, and, you know, just be depressed about it? No, of course not. We're not going to give up, right? No. So, the point is that for general polytopes, we're going to face an uphill battle, but maybe there's nice polytopes out there, right? I mean, we believe in the goodness of life, and, you know, maybe there will be some nice set of polytopes. So what's the nicest polytope of all than simplices, right? So why don't we try to first completely understand how to integrate a polynomial over a simplex? Let's start from the simplest case. Well, I mean, there's some hope, right? Because as you probably know, computing the volume of a simplex is something we also teach to undergraduates, and they can do it actually fast. We teach the right way to undergraduates for that. Determinants, right? Not in calculus class, but in linear algebra class, we finally tell them how to do an integration of a simplex. And computing the centroid is also not so bad. But the problem is, One thing I didn't mention, for general polytopes, actually computing the centroid is already hard. And for these Winkler, Brightwell Winkler polytopes, is MP-hard. Okay. So the strategy is going to be, let's understand, let's develop a theory of integration over simplices, of integrating polynomial over simplices, and not only that, so I will say that simplices in real life come in two flavors. So I can think of a simplex this way, or I can also think of a simplex as a cone. So for example, David Bremner was already using this dichotomy, or schizophrenia again, you know, that you always think of a polytope, or you think of the, let's say, projective realization of it as a cone. And this is a very fruitful, you know, going back and forth between these two representations. So I would like to understand if I have an integral over a simplex or over a simplex of a cone over a simplex, which is another, it's a simplicial cone. What's the point that, you know, at least we know that this will be a good stepping stone because we can compute the, you know, every polytope can at least be subdivided in as a union of simplices and a triangulation, and we can actually do the integration on the whole polytope. And again, I mean, if you notice the applications that I mentioned at the beginning, video games happen in three dimensions, more or less. So you, or a virtual world of three dimensions. So you want to at least, you know that low dimensional problems, fixed dimension problems, low dimensions are very interesting too. So let's try, so fixed dimensions is not very difficult to prove that in fixed dimension, there's a polynomial size triangulations of every convex polytope. Okay, so let's go for it. Let's go study how to integrate a polynomial over a simplex. Now, you see, I haven't so far, of course, this is a geometry optimization conference, not an algebra conference, but here's where the algebra starts lurking in, you know, because a polynomial, right? I'm giving you polynomials, and this computation with polynomials on itself is not so easy. So I want to start making a few warnings, technical warnings. I will go through them very, very fast because essentially, your intuition is correct. I mean, for instance, how do you represent polynomials? How normal people in the street represent polynomials? You know, you stop somebody in the street, say, hey, how do you represent your polynomials? Well, you know, they will tell you some monomials, right? That's typically representations. Similarly, polytopes, they will think, oh, it's already full dimensional. They don't start thinking. So all those intuitions for the normal cases are still correct, and all the theorems I'm going to state more or less without going into the technicalities. So again, for the full dimensional case, I'm back to the normal standard Lebesgue measure where the volume of the fundamental domain is 1 for the, you know, the standard lattice. And so that's what we do for the... Now, if the polytope is not full dimensional, what I'm going to consider is, you know, the linear span, I mean, the affine hull of this polytope, and I will consider the Lebesgue measure on that space in such a way that I will normalize in such a way that the fundamental domain of the lattice that you obtain when you intersect the standard lattice with L is 1. So in that case, if you do that, you are safe because then the answer of your integral will be a rational number. So in other words, when I integrate suppose that I do the integration over the diagonal of a unit square, I mean, if you are picky, you will say, oh, the length of that is square root of 2, but, you know, for me it's going to be 1. I'm normalizing everything to that lattice. Yeah? Just so that you understand why I get always rational numbers, because you might be say, oh, maybe when you compute your integral, you need to deal with the irrational numbers, no? And so that's not the case for me, by the assumption I'm making. Now, the input polyhedron is going to be given by integral rational inequalities and equalities as usual. And now here comes the more technical part that I'm going to go slowly, but quickly. You know, okay, the input polynomial is, there's three classical representations. If you read books on computer algebra, you think about a polynomial in a dense representation of degree m. That means that you have in your memory, you keep in memory every possible monomial up to degree m. So that's a model of computation with polynomials. Another model of computation with polynomials, which has different complexity, and that's why I'm saying this sometimes, is when the sparse model is that you fix the set of monomials that can appear on the polynomials. So in advance, you say, I'm never going to use cubic polynomials. Okay, fair enough. So then you also have the sparse representation. And there's also something called a straight line program representation of polynomials. In the straight line program representation of polynomials, think of the simplest way to describe it is that a polynomial like, x plus x squared. Well, I'm not going to represent it as monomials anymore. Maybe it's better to do this like this. I have fewer operations so that's representations as a sequence of recursive additions and multiplications and subtractions. So this is a very, yes. No, but you can always try to think about, if I have already given a straight line program for my polynomial as input, what's the complexity in that? So just remember the following from now on. All these representations, I'm going to get good complexity, okay? So I don't want to dwell too much in this. I use a black box. Yeah. Actually, both. We have both versions. Okay, so, but all, no matter what representation you use, it's going to be okay. Mostly for the following reason. Every theorem I'm going to state, with the exception of one fantastic theorem, this is going to be the best part, is going to be say something like, if my polynomial is of fixed degree, something fantastic happens. And once you have fixed degree, all these representations in a computer of a polynomial are equivalent. Okay, are you ready for our results? Are you ready? Okay, so let's go. So here's the first. First, I'm going to tell you the bad news. So let's start with the bad news. Okay, so as you probably suspected by my claim, not all polynomials are nice. Even in a simplex, nasty things happen. So here's the theorem. So there's a famous problem in graph theory called the clique problem. So a clique is a complete graph a complete subgraph on a graph, and you wonder whether the graph G contains a clique of size n, at least n. So this is a very famous NP-complete problem, this decision problem, and I'm gonna show you that you can actually answer this using integration. So how do you do that? Well, you go read the literature and find a smart mathematician that worked on this 25 years ago. Motkin and Strauss prove that there is this that you can actually more than 25. Huh? Sorry, a little calculus mistake. Yeah, 45 years ago, 46 years ago. So the clique number of the graph is actually the L infinity norm is the maximum value of this quadratic form over the standard simplex. So they prove this. There's a geometric. So if you maximize the L infinity norm you maximize this quadratic form over the standard simplex, you are actually going to get, okay, you get this expression here, from which, if you know that expression, you can recover the clique number of the graph. This is a beautiful paper of Motkin and Strauss. I highly recommend to read it. And now here I'm going to use something that is, I would say, classical, that you have you're integrating a function to the p power, and then you take the pth root of this function, and you take the limit when p goes to infinity, then you're going to end up with the max, just the maximum of the function. So it's the L infinity. Is this a very standard inequality? And that's what I use. And all I have to say is, hey, guess what? You don't have to go to the limit. All I have to tell you is that, in fact, with p of this size, I can already guess the stability, the clique number of the graph. Yeah, so that's the idea of the result. So when you go home tonight and your wife or your husband or your dog ask you, what did you learn today? So you should tell them, it's empty hard to integrate a power, an arbitrary power of a quadratic form. So, because if you could, MP will be equals to P. I guess I'm a believer. I'm a believer, yes, that P is not equal to NP. So if you believe that, then you should not have such an algorithm. Is it clear? Any questions? Okay. So that's the first result. So I told you the bad news. Arbitrary powers of quadratic forms are already hard to deal with. But I'm going to tell you the great news. I'm going to tell you a piece of great news that this is even more important than you tell your dog tonight. So here is something that really completely took me by surprise. I mean, honestly, I thought we were going to end up with all bunch of NP hardness results. And no, here's a beautiful polynomial result. Instead of giving me a power of an arbitrary polynomial or an arbitrary polynomial, promise me that you will only give me powers of a linear form, any linear form to a power m. Well, there exists a polynomial time algorithm that computes the integral of an arbitrary power of a linear form over a simplex. This is very, very nice. And I will actually go over the sketch of the proof in a moment. No, the dimension is, this is the beauty of it, actually. Yes, this is yet another reason why I like it so much. M is not fixed. So, I mean, of course, it's polynomial. M has to be part of the polynomial solution. Well, it's polynomial in M, and the size of the input of the simplex, right? I mean, the inequalities that define the simplex, and it grows polynomial in the dimension. I mean, the no, in M. So the input is M, the dimension D, and the bit size of the simplex. I mean, for a simplex, it doesn't matter whether I give you a vertex representation or a facet representation. Yes, the bit size of L. Okay, so actually I should have cut the slide up to here because the next thing I'm going to tell you, so my theorem has no assumptions whatsoever about L. This is any L you give me. But here is the thing that is fascinating. If you give me an L that is generic, that means that it's not going to get the same value on the dot product with two of the vertices of the simplex. That means if you do the dot product of L with two of the vertices of the simplex, and you get always a different answer, that's what I call generic. I mean, obviously, if you pick a linear form at random, that's going to be irregular. It's going to be generic, right? So guess what? In that case, not only I can tell you the exact answer, but I can actually give you a formula. Oh, yes, I can give you a formula as a short sum of rational functions. So I'm going to give you an example of the theorem right now. So suppose, Caroli tells me I want to integrate the n power of a linear form over a pentagon, over this particular pentagon that we have here, and I want to. He doesn't know yet what the coefficients of the linear form are. So he just tells me C1, C2. And I said to Caroli, okay, fine. You haven't decided what the particular linear form you're going to use is. But I can tell you right away that the value of the, I can tell you a close answer for your question as a rational function that depends on M and C1, C2. At the moment, these quantities are variables. And I can write this expression. And then, as long as Caroli tells me C1 and C2 are it's a regular linear form, that means that C1 and C2 are not going to create any dot product to zero with any of the edges, I can just plug in Caroli's values and get the answer. Let's play with it. So you see the pentagon there. So let's say that suppose, for example, that first Caroli tells me, well, I just want to know the area. I don't want to know any integral in particular. I just want to know the area. Well, of course, then all Caroli has to do is pick m equals to 0, right? That's all he has to do. It doesn't matter. The rest doesn't matter. So if you actually put m equals 0 in the formula that I had below, you actually get the following rational function. And guess what happens? This rational function does not depend on C1 and C2. Sorry, I mean, it depends on Z1 and Z2, but it doesn't matter what value you pick. You're always, it's an identity. I just prove an identity, a rational function identity that depends on the pentagon that Caroli gave me, right? And ta-da, I get, you know. Okay. Yes, because I have to divide by what? By 2 factorial. I think I forgot to divide by 2 factorial. This is 12 divided by 1 over 2 factorial. But yeah. Well, it's essentially, in the proof you'll see that this comes from the geometry of the polytope. Yes, I didn't pay this gentleman, I swear, to ask me this question. Yeah, these rational functions you are going to read from the geometry. This is part of the geometry of the polytope that is going to tell me the answer. Okay? Now, suppose now Caroli finally says, well, okay. I would like to compute. Now, he made that decision. Now, he picks C1 equals 3, C2 equals 5. So he wants to integrate 3x plus 5y to what power, Caroli? Oh, yeah, to the 100th power. You know, that's a pretty substantial power of an integral. So if you plug it into the formula, just do the substitution, because this linear form happens to be the linear form he picked. He's a nice friend of mine, so he's not going to pick a nasty one. So he picks one that is generic, right? That is regular. He's actually going to substitute and get this answer. Of course, the thing to worry about here is, you know, if you are implementing this on, you know, floating point, or you know, obviously your computer needs to have enough memory to handle the large. Close one? Ah, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Sorry?
Then it's a linear combination of powers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. So, I have to massage it. I can deal with those cases too, but it's definitely, I'm thinking with homogeneous linear forms mostly right now. Okay? So, you're going to see a theorem. No. This can be solved, but. Yeah, for example, I want to do something better than binomial. I want to do something more efficient. So, yeah, so there's, of course, because you see, the ones that you cannot pick are given by the edges, right? I mean, you can also know that there's essentially finitely many forbidden linear forms. Yes, and you can see that they appear essentially on the denominator, and that's exactly why I cannot take those guys, right? The ones that are non-regular are nasty because they are going to give me a division by zero. But you know, thankfully we teach complex analysis, right? So young people, pay attention, take a complex analysis class. I did not. I slept through it. So okay, so if you do a, so what's the strategy? So you're going to do a perturbation in that case. You can take an epsilon perturbation, then you're back to a, you know, generic case, and then you solve and take a limit or compute some residues, and you can get the answer that way. So you can also deal with that case. And we implemented this. But Oleg is asking about how about other polynomials. So in general, the point is the following: that every polynomial that Oleg can think of, I can write it as a sum of powers of linear forms. So that's the powerful thing here. So in fact, I mean, I'm giving you, there's many ways, by the way, and there's a beautiful algebraic geometric theory to understand what are the best ways to write a polynomial as a sum of powers of linear forms. I mean, this goes back to the Hilbert-Waring problem. I think it's British. Waring problem, I think. Why are you laughing, Pablo? Oh, okay. It's German, yes. From Basel, no? Yes. Okay. Yeah, so for example, if you want to write a monomial like this one, I don't even know who invented this formula. It's probably, you know, Gauss or Euclid or somebody like that. And it's just a very old classical formula. that tells you that if you want to express a monomial like this, you can just take it and write it in the following way. So this is an expression immediately in terms of M1, M2, MD as a sum of powers of linear forms. And I want to make a note, stop right here to make you notice that this formula, when the degree of the polynomial is fixed, is polynomial size. Right? When M is fixed, then there's content at most this many sizes. And by the way, I'm not saying in any way that this is the best way to decompose it. I'm just giving you a proof that this will be a polynomial size decomposition into powers of linear forms when the degree of the polynomial is fixed. That's all I'm saying right now. I'm not claiming that this is the most efficient way, and I actually need all the algebraic geometers I can get. I don't know whether there's anybody here, but I need somebody like that to start thinking how to compute the most efficient decompositions. I mean, that's a problem in computer algebra. That's a problem in arithmetic. Really, the algebra side of computation. How to decompose this efficiently? Here's an example. For example, if you have this expression of the polynomial, you can write it as linear powers of linear forms this way. And then, obviously, when you want to compute the integration, you just do it by the pieces. No? Are there any questions? Well, for me, yes. Actually, it's not completely. There are some very famous formulas for standard simplices, for the standard simplex, for integrating monomials. And this really goes back to Gauss. I mean, he looked at these things, and he just gives you, if you have an integral over a standard simplex for a certain monomial, tells you a formula in terms of binomial coefficients. Beautiful, no? But, you know, most simplices you're going to find are not standard simplices. And then it becomes, you know, an issue of, you know, we beat, okay, you'll see the experiments. Okay, so, I don't want to go through all the details. So the input data, you have the dimension of the simplex, what is this? Oh, n is the number of variables you're integrating, and then you're given a polynomial in some representation of a straight line program, dense representation, whatever. So you can compute the integral of any polynomial of fixed degree in polynomial time. And remember, the theorem that I stated before tells you that if your polynomial is not a fixed degree, but it's actually it's a power of a linear form, then you can do it in polynomial time. By the way, this has an interesting corollary. I can do linear programming over a simplex in polynomial time. Not a very interesting corollary, but you can also... just kidding. No, it's just... The reason I find it interesting, the reason I even mention it is because, you know, not many people think that integration is actually a way of doing optimization too, but it is a way of doing optimization. Are there any questions? Okay. So now I'm going to tell you a little bit about our methods in the hopefully not all the remaining time. So by the way, many of the methods, I don't know who said it, but you have to stand in the shoulder of giants. And so, literally, in some senses, go back to look at the really classical stuff in convexity, but use it from the point of view of computation, make it work in complexity. That's what we're doing here. So many of the concepts I'm going to go over are so classical that I think, you know, this goes back to books like Harviger's book on convexity, and so you can find many references. So I'm not claiming any originality here. For example, Barvinok's book on convexity contains many of these results. So there's the notion of valuation on convex geometry. So what's a valuation? I'm going to consider a linear map, a linear transformation from the space, from the vector space of characteristic functions of polyhedra into a field. Yeah. So this is, I know this is very abstract. So characteristic functions, I hope everybody knows. I mean, it's a function that tells me 1 if I'm in the set, 0 otherwise, right? This is character. So you can. This is a vector space because you can add these functions, pointwise addition, you know, it's clearly a vector space. And you are interested in maps from this vector space into a field that is linear. So if you have a linear relation on the characteristic functions, you would like that map to be preserved by the evaluation. And this is evaluation. So in particular, you know, if you have a linear relation like this, that there's a linear dependence on characteristic functions of polytopes, then you get a also linear dependence there. I mean, the classical example is the inclusion-exclusion principle, right? When you have a set, you know, this is a famous equation how to write the elements in P union A. No? This is an example of valuation. Okay, and valuations have been studied by many, many, many mathematicians, but one of the most famous valuations that goes in the, you know, I don't know, at least to the 80s, to the 1980s, it's probably earlier than that, is the following valuation. So if you have a rational polyhedron, you can define the sum. This is a very interesting discrete valuation. Is the sum given a linear form epsilon here, you have e to the epsilon x for every lattice point in the polytope. Okay, so this is telling you one integer one real number for every lattice point that you have on your polytope, right? Now the valuation that we're going to use in the talk today is a second example, is the integral valuation, is the exponential integral valuation. So where you are taking the integral over the polyhedron, or integral over the characteristic function of the polyhedron of e to the of this exponential function, and to make this evaluation, here is the only thing that sounds really weird. I promise this is the only weird thing that you're going to see. But if your polytope contains a line, to make an evaluation, I really need to be zero. So I need that the value of the evaluation on something that contains an infinite line has to be zero. Otherwise, things don't match up. You know, for many people, this is the what? Well, just trust me. This is the best way to define it. Okay. And here is the most important fact that I'm going to use about valuations. Again, this is very classical. If you have a triangulation of evaluation, obviously, if I can figure out the valuation of the triangulation of the pieces of the triangulation, I can know the whole piece, the whole polytope. So it is enough in some sense to understand valuations for simplicial cones. This is going back again to this situation. Oh, before I show you there's a formula, explicit formula for the for the valuations of cones, but this is just an illustration of another. So you get beautiful identities thanks to evaluation. So for example, here is an obvious identity on characteristic functions of polytopes. The line segment AB, you can write it as, well, it's easier if I explain it with a, so you want to write the line segment AB, so you first write it as this infinite half ray plus this infinite half ray. I have so far counted twice these points. So now what do you do? You subtract all the infinite line. And that's one way you can write, you know, by valuation. This is an identity on the vector space of characteristic functions. Yeah? And thanks to this identity on characteristic functions, I get an identity on rational functions. Why? Because the cones have a rational, the valuations on cones have rational function expressions, guys. I mean, this is the message to take home. So here is the theorem. Again, I don't know who proved this, but very old theorem. If you have the only interesting valuation for us today is this one here. So if you have you want to compute the integral valuation. So remember, this is I'm talking about the exponential integral, you know, over the cone C, translated to the vertex S. That's what I mean by I S plus C. This horrible thing. It's actually written in terms of the determinant of the rays of the cone. You know, because it's a simplicial cone, I can talk about this determinant. Times this rational function, which has essentially the minus e to the dot product with the vertex, divided by the dot product with the rays of the cone. So b1, b2, bj are the rays of the cone, and little s is the vertex of the cone. That's it. That's the Yeah, you have, the reason I put this lambda is because you have to take this determinant with respect to the lattice that you're working on. So this is for the situation when you are in low dimension.
The relative determinant.
Yes. Okay, that's all I'm going to use. Remember, the integral, this integral can be written as a rational function. That's the theorem. Okay. And, okay, second theorem that, again, was proved long time ago. I think for sure it was proved in the 80s. And the three names that come to mind from the 80s are Brion, Michel Brion, Jim Lawrence, and Vladimir Varshenko, I think is his name. Sasha. Alexander Varshenko. Thank you. They prove, all three of them independently, they prove the following beautiful theorem that says, suppose now you give me a polytope. So now you have a polytope. And you are interested on the valuation value, the integral valuation value, for example. But this is true for any valuation. So you want to compute the valuation on this polytope, how do I call it, P? Well, guess what? It's just the sum of the valuations at the cones. So you can do distributed computing. All you have to do is compute the valuation at each one of these cones. And because we know how to deal with cones, we can do that. It's a sum of rational functions. Yeah? Is it clear? So here's an example. I mean, I promise you, if you don't remember anything else, just remember these beautiful formulas, please. I mean, just, you know, write them, you make a tattoo of them or something, you know? You know, you can put them on your tattoo. It's a very good tattoo. It's going to look good on you. Okay, so here's the first formula. The formula, okay, I'm saying these formulas, of course, for the regular generic case, for the because that's the, when there's no, you know, residues or anything, but, okay. The formula for the integral over a simplex is the following beautiful rational function, which is the rational function that I obtain when I evaluate on the denominator. I'm evaluating exactly on the cones that give me the directions at every one of the edges, right? So essentially, at every vertex, I'm looking at these directions. So if this is S1 and S2, I'm looking at S2 minus S1, and that's exactly what appears in the denominator, and I have to take the dot product with my linear form. Yes? And then in the numerator, all I'm doing is I'm evaluating the linear form at the vertex. Isn't it beautiful? I mean, it's almost like quadrature formulas, but you're only doing it at the vertices. And similarly, the formula that one can prove is this one. That if you want to take the m power, so I'm going to prove the, I'm going to give you the sketch of the proof of how to get this formula from knowing this formula. So this one is direct from Brion, Lawrence, Varshenko. All I have to do is work a little hard. I mean, it's just you're going to see the proof is easy. Once you know this one, you can actually get this proof. But you see, it's again a beautiful formula because you want to compute the m power of an integral, the integral of an m power of a linear form on the simplex. All you have to do is evaluate this linear form at the vertices, literally. That's all you have to do. So there's very little computation effort. Okay. Any questions, comments, complaints?
I guess, like in the case of integral, you have to remove some terms.
Yeah. Well.
The contribution is zero.
Yeah. So exactly. So like in this example, you know, this. So here's the secret. I'm gonna write my polytope as a sum of polytopes that are either cones or things that contain lines. And things that contain lines can go to hell because they go to zero anyway. Yes, so that's the idea. That's exactly the idea. Anything else? Okay. So let's go a little bit faster because now I need to finish if I want to give you the, tell you about latte. So, okay. So I have the formula for the integral of the exponential function. So what I construct is I use a trick. I take an auxiliary variable t that dilates the linear form. Essentially, that makes this an analytic function of t. So this analytic function of t is equal to a, you know, this other one is not analytic in first round. You can do a Laurent expansion, and you know that this has to be equal to that, so you can just make a, compute identical terms, right? So if you want to recover the integral of the LMX to the M, you just are looking for the coefficient in the Taylor expansion of this of the T to the M power, right? That's what you're looking for. But you can get it from the other side. Yeah, so I do the, so they have to be equal. So if I do the Lorentz series expansion around T of this left side, this is a metamorphic function, but I can do it, and it's, you know, here is the Lorentz series expansion. So all I need to remove is the particular term for T to the M, and that's the answer of the integral. Okay, so voila. So this, I mean, is the formula that I promised a moment ago for the particular cone, but because Brion's Lorentz-Varchenko theorem, this is the sum of these things gives me that. Here's another corollary. Now this time I'm doing the non-generic version. Let's say when the linear form you're integrating is not necessarily generic or random or regular. Then you, of course, the formula becomes more ugly because you have to put residues in the formula, but it's, we have to do it sometimes. I mean, every now and then you actually run into these formulas. And of course, then from there you get that the formula for the integral over the polytope, you can write as sum of the integrals over the cones, the tangent cones of each one of the vertices. So this is the complication of the formula. I beg your pardon? Speak louder. Oh, L hat is the perturbation of L. Oh, this is a typo. L hat is a typo. So this is meant to be L plus epsilon hat, where L epsilon hat is the perturbation of the, so the linear form is not regular, it's not generic. So you perturb it, you know, and then you take the limit when epsilon goes to zero, essentially. Any other question? By the way, before I forget, look at this corollary. I can do this for simplices in polynomial time because, well, okay, this is going to be just these summons, right? But if you have a polytope that is polynomial in size, I mean, the number of simplices that you have in your polytope is polynomial in size, or the number of vertices is polynomial in size, for example, then I can do it in polynomial time as well by the same, it's same kind of argument. So, for example, polytopes in fixed dimension work happy, you know, no problem. So I want to finish soon. We can get many other formulas, and we prove, for example, there's this formula that is not a rational version formula, but assumes that M is fixed. Then you can do a different kind of a Taylor expansion, and you can get this beautiful formula for the integral of over a power of a linear form over the simplex, where you get some kind of binomial expansion on the linear form powers. Here's another one that appeared in the literature many years ago by Jean Lasserre, where you can, if you have a symmetric multilinear form that you want to integrate, all you have to do is evaluate that polynomial on the vertices of the simplex. You get a beautiful, beautiful, special, beautiful formulas of this kind, many of them. Okay, conclusions of the theory. So we generalize the work of many people, but in particular, Jim Lorentz, by the way, I should give credit to Jim Lorentz. He has already a complexity result for computing the volume, but the novelty that we contribute theoretically here is that we can handle polynomials. I mean, that we can actually compute integrals, not just volumes. So we generalize his work, and there's other versions that are not algorithmic, they don't have complexity results, by Brion, Barvinok, Lasserre, and others. So again, in this case, they had hinted to these kinds of results, but their complexity is either not verified or they don't have the right complexity. No. Yes, and we get explicit formulas for the case of powers of linear forms. Very nice. So then, again, as I mentioned, so simple polytopes with polynomially many vertices or simplicial polytopes with polynomially many facets, you can compute the same things in polynomial time. Now, remember, life is not totally rosy. Integration of powers of arbitrary powers of quadratic forms is empty-hard, even over a simplex. So now we need to talk about Latte. in the last. So I should say something about latte. So what? I have 5 minutes. Okay, I'll be. Okay, how about this? I only have 5 minutes, and I hate speakers that go over time. So I'm going to not do that myself. Now everybody knows that I don't like that, huh? Okay, so I will give you very, very brief history, and see, that way nobody's going to be forced to see the software. Only those that want to see it, they can come and talk to me independently. But you can download it for free. The good things in life are free. This is free, therefore it's good. Huh? So Latte was created in 2001, the first version. It implemented Barvino. The reason it's called Latte is not because I'm a coffee addicted person. I don't like coffee, actually. It means lattice point enumeration. So this is a software that counts the number of lattice points on polytops. That was the original intention. And then we implemented Barvinox algorithm that runs in polynomial time for fixed dimension. Then in 2007, Matthias Koppe created Latte Macchiato. Latte Macchiato, he likes coffee a lot. He improved the algorithms. He sped up the algorithms by many, many orders of magnitude by using interesting geometric insights and new data structures. And then now the great moment is 2011. Now we have Latte Integrale. You know, it's playing with the milk. If you know Italian, you understand that we're making jokes about in Italian here. Because Integrale, Latte Integrale is like whole milk. Okay? Not only we can count the number of lattice points on a polytope, we can compute volumes, we can compute integrals over polynomials, and to finish, let me actually give you the webpage. Here's the webpage of Latte. So all you have to go is www.math.ucdavis.edu and tilde Latte, and that's the webpage. You can download Latte, look at the papers that explain, that give the foundation of Latte, how Latte works, prove the theorems that the Latte works really, and you can also look at the people involved. We are very, very happy. Well, okay, here's Matthias, and we are very happy to say that a lot of students have been members of this project. I mean, undergraduates have been the main engine they are really the main programmers that suffered through the C++ code. Those were students at the first. There's many, many students now still working on this. Brandon is the lead graduate student dealing with all of them. He's done enormous amount of work, and he's really responsible for the success of the new version. And I invite you to download Latte. I'll stop with 1 minute left. Thank you so much.